GWA 517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
Number 71, Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody at above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
Number 71, Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Something. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy?
Yeah.
Did we just call about the UFOs? They're out there. Same airplanes.
County dispatch.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Why not take a look? All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. If you're a fan of the show and would like to help support the podcast by becoming a patron, head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles podcast or hit the link below, where you can find out about the show and the rewards available to you. Plus, as an added bonus, every new patron gets a shout out on the show. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thank you for being here. We got a great show for you tonight. Our guest coming on the moment is BB, and she comes to us from Los Angeles, California. And BB is going to share a really rather strange experience she had at Denver Airport and some strange tones that mysteriously downloaded onto her phone. But first off, I'd like to thank Ian UFO17 from Australia and Juice Kovacs from the US for leaving 5-star reviews on iTunes. It's great to get some feedback from the podcast. Now back to the show. Welcome to the show, BB. Really appreciate you coming on and sharing your unexplained experience tonight.
Well, thank you, Nick. It's my absolute pleasure, and it's wonderful to be able to share the experience this way. Oh, I thank you for that.
Can you start at the beginning for the listeners and just walk us into what happened, please?
Sure. Well, as a reference point, I will say that obviously I'm an American, as you can tell by the way that I'm speaking. I was born in Chicago, Illinois in the early 50s. And I do have, believe it or not, I remember flying around our apartment when I was really, really tiny. Of course, people could say that's a dream or not, but there's a tangible sense of the reality of that, and quite magical and really quite wonderful. So fast forward to about the age of probably somewhere between 3 and 4 in the middle of the night, because I know it was the middle of the night. The memory is that it was very dark, and I'm standing at my bedroom window looking outside, and there are no real noises of adults. So it feels like they're all sleeping in this memory. And outside, there's a ship, just like Captain Hook's ship from Peter Pan from the 1500s, only it's a sailing ship in the air, the size that would fit about 2 adults and 1 child. And that's a real tangible memory of standing there. That's been with me for as long as I can remember. And let's fast forward again to being, let's see, I must have been about 9 or 10. We were in the Michigan countryside at night. I was with my mom, my dad, and my brother driving in a convertible. It had just gotten dark out. And I remember seeing Well, actually, before seeing, my father was going, "Shirley, Shirley, look at that, look at that." And we looked up, and there were these lights zooming around in the heavens and at these impossible speeds, doing these very strange, like turning on a dime maneuvers. although I wasn't thinking that. I was just enthralled. And my dad pulled the car over to the side of, it was a country road. We were driving back to our summer house from having eaten out, and it was a beautiful drive, and there was nobody else around. It was well lit up. The moon was out and all of that. And there we were in our convertible with the top down, and my brother and I are sitting on top, you know, where you can sit on the car right above the seat, our legs kind of dangling into the seat. And I just remember my parents going, oh my God. And that is it. I don't remember going back to the house or anything else. But I will tell you that about 10 years ago, I asked my brother if he remembered it, and he got this funny look in his eyes. Now, bear in mind that we're from a family where this kind of thing was just, it wasn't even worth it to ridicule it. It didn't exist. But then we had this experience. I had the experience. And my brother's response after this really strange look in his eyes was, you know, Beeb, I kind of do remember that. And I go, well, what? Tell me, what do you remember? And he goes, That's it. I remember sitting in the car. And that's it. So there was that. And nothing much of a unidentified flying object, high strangeness kind of thing came into my awareness. Now, I've been studying metaphysical subjects and sacred texts. I've always been massively interested in ancient philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. I've been a meditator for many, many years, and I've always been drawn into those kinds of energies. But I never was interested in ufology at all. But something happened. I don't know what happened. It was in 2010. My partner Tom and I started watching kind of as a guilty secret, because again, we had this bias. I wasn't even aware I had the bias, but I didn't want to tell anybody that I was watching Ancient Aliens. And we really enjoyed the show a lot. I remember Tom got like very, very astonished by the phenomenon of crop circles. And I loved it too. It was the same kind of beautiful feeling in the sort of the solar plexus, when you really love something and there's a sense of wonder. So something was getting revved up. And we found out that Stephen Greer was coming to speak in February in 2011. I live in Los Angeles. So this was at the Conscious Life Expo, which, if you don't know, is a huge convention of metaphysical people and ufology people, consciousness, et cetera, et cetera. And it happens twice a year. And this was the first time that we went in February 2011. So we were waiting in line to get into the hall, and it was just snaking around. He was a very popular speaker. I didn't know anything about him other than what I had read, and I was curious. I thought it was very interesting. Tom knew even less than I did, but he's a really good sport and likes to have fun and seek out unusual new adventures. So there we were, and I thought, well, I asked him to hold our place in line while I went down to the lobby. It was at this very nice hotel next to, well, not right next to, a good walk's distance from LAX airport. And there was a Starbucks downstairs. So I went downstairs, and another long line. I wanted to get something to drink for myself and for Tom. And while I was standing in line, I pulled out my cell phone just to see if there were any messages, but it was frozen. And when I went to turn it off, I mean, it wasn't doing anything. And I tried to turn it off. Nothing was happening at all. And I thought, oh no. At that time, I've been an actress since I was 6 years old. And I would get upset if I was performing and somebody's tones went off or whatever. It's just such a no-no, you know. And I really didn't want that to happen while I was sitting watching Dr. Greer speak. But I couldn't get my phone to do anything. I put it back in my purse by the time I got the drinks. And I thought, okay, I just hope, you know, it's going to be okay. went upstairs, found Tom. We had our seats. We sat down. There was a real sense of anticipation. As soon as he started speaking, I just forgot about my phone. Now, it's not so much that it was Stephen Greer speaking. It was that I was ready to imbibe the information. I was really ready to imbibe the information. And I remember having moments of ahas and feeling chills. And it was kind of amazing. It was kind of an initiation for me and into just a deeper recognition of who I am and where I'm going. The lecture ended. I remembered my phone. It was still frozen. We walked back to the car. I needed to speak. I think it was my daughter, or she was supposed to send me a text message. My phone was not budging. It wasn't doing a thing. Well, the house was about a 20-minute drive from the airport. We got back home. It was late at night, and I was upstairs. Tom was down in the kitchen, and the phone started making this really weird, I don't know how to describe it. It was these strange sounds started emanating from my phone. Again, it's still frozen. I couldn't do anything. You know, I wasn't responding. I don't know why I didn't take the battery out or Tom didn't think of it, but I don't know. It happened three times that night. And on the last time that it happened, Tom goes, hey, BB, do you think you're being contacted? That hadn't even occurred to me. I thought about that. I remember getting chills. Tom is interesting. He's been sort of my partner in crime, if you will, my fellow companion through some very interesting experiences. And he has this uncanny way of cutting to the chase and his understanding where he'll point something out to me. And when he said that, I got very, very tired, went to sleep. The next day, woke up. The phone was unfrozen, but there was the memory card. The memory card was completely fried. It was trashed. I went out and I bought a new one. I took it out of its little cellophane packaging and installed it into the phone. And I mean, everything. I had to redo all of the settings and find a ringtone. And I was looking. There was one ringtone that was saved. And it said smart.mp3. And I go, oh, it must be something, you know, that you get as a freebie from the company. And I played it, and the tones that had come through the phone the night before were what were on that MP3 recording. It was very strange, very strange. It was exciting and strange. It was very high strangeness, strange. Oh, I just remembered that that night, Tom had to go back to his office job, but I had gotten an additional ticket to do a more intensive workshop with Dr. Greer. And I tried to tell people who were part of his team this, you know, that this had happened. There was not a lot of interest in it. I was just astounded. And I didn't know who else to talk to. So there was not a lot of reciprocation from them, but they were very busy. I understand that. So months went by, life goes on. Meanwhile, I'm listening to the tones, and there were voices that I was able to isolate with just a simple equalizer on my iTunes app on my laptop. And I couldn't quite get it, but my witness is Tom. If he were here, he would tell you that there are female voices, and you could barely hear, "We come to tell our story," or listen to it another time. It becomes, "Tell the truth of our story." Then the next time is, "We tell the story of our truth. We tell the story of our truth." Very rhythmical, but the freaky thing is the message changes. Now, you could say that I'm crazy, but I do have a witness. And Tom got freaked out. He just didn't want to listen to it anymore. But I was rather obsessed the way in Close Encounters of the Third Time, I was like the person trying to make the mashed potatoes tower but I would, you know, I was obsessed. I really needed to hear this message. And I would meditate with it, and I really got entrained into the tones, and I there was this quest. I could hear what sounded like very human female voices. Well, fast forward to that year, December, we went on a very short weekend trip to Colorado. We had a great time. I didn't think much of the tones, but I had prepared by knowing that if I had time, I was going to try to isolate these tones even further. We got to the airport. I didn't know anything about the Denver airport back then. I'm kind of glad I didn't. In a way, though, I'm kind of disappointed because I would have loved to have looked for all of the, you know, demonic drawings, et cetera, et cetera. But I was just an innocent, if you will. So was Tom. And there was, we got there early enough, and then we found out that the flight was delayed. We had like, I think it was about a 90-minute wait. We looked at the room, and there was this little computer station off to the side, about 15 feet away from the main row of chairs. So Tom sat in the main row of chairs. I sat, there were three little workstations in a line, and I sat in the middle. And I got myself all set up. It was winter. It was cold. I had a bulky coat. I had my weekend bag. I had my laptop bag. And I pulled everything out with these bulky headphones. And I proceeded to listen to the tones. I was aware that people sat down next to me. So I was kind of snugly fit in the middle of this little workstation. The next thing I know, I open my eyes. And what was really odd is that the murmur of voices and, you know, the sounds of a very busy airport were completely gone. The lights were down. It was very dark. Nobody was in that gate. Tom was gone. There was nobody there. I was weirded out. Gathered my things together. I knew that something highly strange had happened. I didn't think about it that much. I mean, I looked at the clock. A good 3.5 hours had gone by since I had sat down. I started walking down the corridor looking for Tom. I didn't see him, and I wasn't afraid. I was concerned. I was weirded out. But strangely enough, there really was no fear. I'm certain about that. After going, you know, the only thing that was kind of freaky, the airport was very empty, and it didn't feel all that safe because it was so dark. Well, finally, after 10 minutes of walking around, looking for him, there he is coming, you know, I round the bend, and he's coming at me, and man, was he angry. He thought that I had gotten on the plane. He actually told me that he had me paged. He asked the flight attendant, who was the ticket taker at the gate, if there was any way that she would be able to let him know. She said no, that was against, you know, all rules. But they had actually paged me, gone looking for me. There were lots of boarding calls. I had not been aware of this. I had been unaware that so much time had gone by. And as Tom is talking, he started out very angrily. But when I kept saying, you know, he said, "I look, you were not in that seat, baby." And I said, you know, I didn't move. I didn't go anywhere. I was there the entire time. We both got really silent. And we both knew, you know, when you know somebody really well, you don't have to say it out loud. We both thought, yeah, I disappeared. I'd gone invisible. So we had missed the last flight back, and we ended up staying an extra night. But, you know, I was glad because it was a deep, intense experience, and I had the night to relax and wonder. I'm still in wonder. I haven't gone to a regressionist. I'm considering it, but It's just one of those phenomena that has happened to me, that there is absolutely no way I can explain it. That's pretty much my story in a nutshell.
I'm going to play tones for the audience now. Let me know if you experience anything, either in the comments below or shoot me an email. Where did you think you went?
I will say that when I first began to look into it, to try to remember, there's an image and a sensation of being held on either side, standing up, walking down a corridor, which is slightly going down. Like my elbows are bent and there's a person at either side of me, holding onto my elbows, guiding me. But that's it. I mean, I don't have any other memory. And I can't even say that's a memory. It's an image and a sensation.
Do you think maybe it's connected to the actual airport itself, that the airport in Denver is not without its controversy?
That is what I originally went to. Of course, that's possible. There's also something that I think may also be a possibility, in that, you know, I've been meditating for a long time, and there is a state of, I'm not sure what the word in English is. I'm sure there's a Sanskrit word or a Tibetan word where there's a blur between realities that occurs. This is something that I'm contemplating. I don't know, Nick. You know, the possibilities are there, but I really don't know. And I just don't know. I like the feeling, though. There's a sense of being alive that I get when I'm in a state of wonderment. There's something marvelous about that. I don't know.
It would be interesting finding out if anyone else has had any similar experiences at the airport itself, or it could just be connected to the tones, maybe.
Well, the tones are very odd. They're intense. And I will say that I stopped listening to them for quite a while after that. Okay, you know, there's enough of that for now. My intuition is that they are connected to the tones. But then again, the tones could be connected to the airport or energies that utilize that airport. I don't know. That's the thing.
A lot of unanswered questions.
I know. So part of me does want to do a regression. However, I don't know if I trust it all that much. It would have to be somebody who is absolutely impeccable. No matter what, with hypnosis, the expert, the hypnotist, is going to be bringing their proclivities, their imagination, their values to the experience. And I've held back because of that consideration. Not that I think there's some wonderful hypnotists out there, regressionists. There truly are. And I'm not ruling it out, but that's why it's taken me so long. I want to be very, very careful because it is a way to access more information. And also, you know, I'm an actress. Well, I stopped. Interestingly, in 2011, a whole bunch of stuff started happening. Like crystals started talking to me. There was a gnome on the roof of my house. I mean, just magical, amazing things where I went into communicating with the elemental world and stopped going on stage. But I know from my lifelong experience of utilizing my imagination as part of my creative expression, that's part of why it's not that it's not real. It's very real. I'm a really good hypnotic subject, and I don't want to create something out of nothing. So I'd want to work with somebody who would understand that and had real scientific controls in place. And that's all. That's all I need to say about that.
Maybe it was a time slip.
I definitely lost time. Time changed. When I thought that I was sitting in the chair, I wasn't, according to what other people were experiencing. I was not there. So there's this disconnect. I might have just been out of phase slightly, where I wasn't visible and still have been there.
Busy airport, isn't it?
It's yes. And it was very busy. That it was, you know, the beginning of the holiday season, Christmas and all of that. Yeah, there were a lot of people going through and passing, and the gate was very crowded. I would say about 15 minutes after I sat down at that workstation, I was present for a good 20 minutes into it. And then I was just, I remember listening to the tones, though. I remember being completely focused and intent on what I was hearing, one-pointed attention. And these are, you know, things that meditators use to get into different states. Perhaps combined with the tones, I did get into one of those states. Then again, it was at the Denver airport, you know, what one hears. I don't know. I haven't seen any proof, but it's certainly very intriguing. I will say that.
Have you been back to Denver airport?
No, I have not.
Do you intend to?
No, that would really, really be interesting. You're giving me an idea because I do have a friend who lives near there. I could go visit her and see what happens. And I had another experience at a different airport. It wasn't about invisibility at all, but it was definitely an encounter with someone who was very strange. So I think that airports are portals. I think it's easier for different types of beings to pass through these areas. I think energetically, you know, we go to these places. They are portals, literally, from to port us from one place to another. So there's that aspect of it. And, you know, I had this experience at the San Francisco airport where I think I met someone that I know very well who doesn't live here now, but was able to get to the airport. Airports are very interesting places.
Of course, of all those people and all those energies.
Exactly.
In and out.
Right. So airports do intrigue me very much.
I must admit, the only time I've ever vanished an airport was generally during the duty-free time. When you've got a bit of time before your flight, and that's duty-free.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah.
No, but I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing this unusual experience.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And I thank you again for asking me. I want to share with you that I am feeling, as a result of this experience of speaking with you today, that I would like to pursue this further. You know, it's given me the opportunity to really just express it again. And I do feel that it would be right to find out if there's a way to access more information. I want to do that. So thank you for the opportunity to come to this realization.
You'd have to keep us updated.
Oh, I will. I will.
I certainly have myself and the listeners intrigued.
Well, cool. It's nice to share these things, guys. It is. It's important. And I was just telling Nick that, you know, this opportunity that he's giving people to share is really important because there's nothing like hearing firsthand experiences.
No matter how unusual they are.
Exactly. And knowing that those who listen want to hear them instead of, you know, sitting in your room like, oh, no, I can't talk to those people. And they would never. No, this is great stuff that you're doing. So thank you for that, Nick.
Thank you. So what did you think of Stephen Greer?
Well, as I said, I was really taken with that first lecture. Now, a lot of that had to do.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, welcome back.
Oh, goodness gracious. Did I fade away?
Yeah, you vanished completely.
I was talking and then all you said, hello. And I went, nip, nip. I was just talking away. Well, that's rather appropriate, huh?
Yeah, that was it, nothing.
That's bizarre.
So that's what you think of Dr. Stephen Greer.
Exactly. I think that, you know, no matter what anybody says, he's engendered a lot of controversy. But the bottom line is, I really admire the work that he did back in the day with that press conference.
Yeah.
That was pivotal. And, you know, we all have our human personalities and foibles, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm grateful that he gave that lecture that day that I was able to hear, and so much came out of it. So that's what I'll say about Dr. Stephen Greer.
Yeah. Like you said, people are complex.
That's right. Contact in the Desert. A couple of years ago, I went to one of his events, his contact events. And he really, you know, he has a love for it, and it's controversial. And I have to say, I see more plasmic events from my yard here on the mountaintop in California than I have like at SETI or at Contact in the Desert. A lot of activity happens where I live. Oh, the mountain that I'm on is a very, very old, and it's not very tall at all. I mean, it's not even 1,000 feet, but it is considered, or it was, the native people were the Chumash, and they're pretty much wiped off the face of the earth. There's a small tribal contingent still here, but when they were in their prime, they considered this area sacred. As a matter of fact, we are walking distance from Swami Yogananda's autobiography of a yogi, the very first ashram that he turned into an ashram in America is walking distance from our house right across the ravine. So he recognized way back when, I think it was in the 20s, there was something special about this place. And the earth energies here are very strong. I keep thinking we need to get out of California and go somewhere else. And Los Angeles, you know, oh my goodness. But there's something about the telluric energies here that I feel I'm kind of supposed to be here. And I'm learning about working with them. So it's a kind of a magical place. But I don't like to go down into the city too much. It's only like a 10-minute drive. That I much prefer being here.
It's been wonderful talking to you today.
Oh, it's been wonderful speaking with you too, and I wish you many blessings.